Jim.
Oh,
Jim,
man. Here
Jim,
we go.
Jim.
A text message says, what is the deal with the opening of your show? The answer is, good question, texter. Good question, and thank you. I'm seeing the sad news of Hasbro laying off 15% of its employees. Most workers took the news okay, but I have to tell you about Mr. Potato Head. He is in pieces. Last week, this show was the first to tell you about Chicken of the Sea tuna brand now offering $1 million to anyone who can prove that they met a mermaid. That is your cue, George Santos, who, when I wrote that, I'm pretending listens to this fraudcast. And finally, Oscar Mayer is hiring drivers for the Wienermobile. Are there any Wienermobiles in Canada, or are they all American? Anyway, don't think I didn't look into the qualifications. You have to have a driver's license, a clean driving record, and absolutely no dignity. Sounds like I'm a good candidate. I'm Jim Richards.
News Talk Tonight is on with your host, Jim Richards, on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
I watched football yesterday. I have some circumstances that I watched football in, and later I might do something that is known as...
Do the gross topic.
Can you turn off their microphone? That's a live mic from outside the radio station right now, where people are protesting, hoping that I do the gross topic, because something happened while I was watching the Super Bowl. Not the Super Bowl, the two games that qualifies for the Super Bowl, and we now know that it's going to be, it's exciting, the Kansas Cityers versus the Philadelphiaers. I watched the first game at my friend's house, which involves gross topic, which we might get to a little bit later on, but the other game, all I did while watching it was say to myself... this is going to sound stupid, but this is me during the whole football game. Super Bowl 57. The 57th Super Bowl. The Super Bowl. That's live from Arizona. The Super Bowl. That's me during the whole game. The whole Kansas City-Cincinnati game by myself in my house. Just every once in a while, whenever there was a good play, I would put it on mute and I would go, the 57th Super Bowl. Kansas City and the Philadelphia Eagles. The Super Bowl. That's the whole thing I did. And then I was like, maybe I need to get a voice agent. Or what a texter said just moments ago, maybe you need to get a life. Let's go with that. Maybe you do need to get a life. Jim, a texter, writes, are you having any merchandise coming out with your face on it? No, I don't believe that will ever happen. Another person is wondering, are you handsome today? Guys, am I handsome today? Am I handsome today? Tony, first you, am I handsome today?
You're okay. I was telling Andrew, though, Andrew's got some 5 o'clock shadow thing going on right now. He looks really good. Usually his beard's really scruffy and stuff.
Not about Andrew right now. It's about me. Yeah. Andrew,
you wanted to talk about you.
I am talking about me. Okay. Let me get into the fraudcast, which is what I decided to Google fraudcast to see if anybody named their podcast the fraudcast, because I thought I had the idea of, hey, fraudcast is a good name for a podcast. I can do do that. I can repurpose this show and call it the Fraudcast. I was so excited. I was so excited. And then I Googled it and I found out that somebody also has already done it. But then I thought, I don't care. I can still do it because I want, when I came up with the name Mental Health, I was like, am I the only one who's come up with that name? And I Googled it and other people have, but they have their podcasts. It's one of these things. Podcasts are kind of like when everybody had a blog. Remember, people would be like, oh yeah, I have a blog. And then you would check out their blog. And they last updated it, in 2011. That's what a podcast is like. Like, I'll find a podcast is like, oh, that topic might be interesting. And they stopped updating it 3 years ago. But I guess, yeah, who am I to judge? But that is, that was my idea. And I thought, okay, I'm having good ideas. But nothing is as good as this idea right now. Until 8:20, you've got an hour and 10 minutes. And we will not know who you are. Text us your greatest secret. And we will, so this is anonymous. Text us your greatest secret. And we will rate them from 1 to 10 at 8:20. If you don't know about time zones, that's in an hour and a half. Okay? So in this, if you're listening to this on the podcast, that's in the second hour. Text us your greatest secret, and we will rate them from 1 to 10 and talk about them in a non-judgmental way. Unless you want to be judged, then we will judge you. But not in a mean, well, maybe in a mean way, it depends what it is. And hopefully, I don't know, like, I don't care if it's illegal unless it's something that we don't want to, there's certain things I don't want to hear about. But 71010, text us your greatest secret, and we will rate them from 1 to 10 a little bit later on. None of them, like, my greatest secret is probably the fact that I have admitted to stealing. When I was working in radio, the station went on strike when I was in Halifax. I'd been there 2 years, no thanks to Halifax, but I wanted to come back home. And so they were trying to break the union by giving everybody a month for every year that you'd work there. So I got, giving you like a $1,500 for every month you worked there. I'd worked there for 2 years. Sorry, for every, anyway. Giving you $1,500 for every year that you worked there. So I got $300 to buy out because they were trying to break the union. So I came back to Toronto. I went through that money pretty fast. I was living at home and I started stealing money out of my mom's purse to go to a strip joint. And I still do that. Steal money from my mom's purse, that is. Not go to, please. I have no part in that. Andrew, never hit that sound effect again. That sound effect, in fact, we should delete that. Please never, ever hit that sound effect again. I do not, I want to just right now, at this specific time, I want to distance myself from that. Andrew, I'm very ashamed of you because that reflects poorly on me, who just admitted that he stole money from his mom's purse to go to strip joints. But still, I don't want that sound effect, at least not now. I'm not saying there's no time for that sound effect. All I'm saying is the time is not now. So text us your biggest secret, and in about an hour, we will rate your big secret from 1 to 10 at 71010, 71010, and maybe I'll get around to the gross topic a little bit later on in the show. And we're talking, I think, later about what is your poverty dinner when you were in college, or maybe you were growing up with something that was really cheap, but you loved it. What was the poverty dinner that you would make? Maybe you would call it dinner on a dime. I know that I used to make something, it's funny, on this list they have something called glop, which is just like emptying the fridge of everything that might go together. I remember I used to make a glop. I used to like get pasta noodles, corned beef hash, can of corned beef hash, and a can of beans, and mix that all together. And that would be the glop that I made. And I'm wondering if anybody has a glop recipe a little bit later on. There will be a serious conversation during this commercial break between Andrew and myself about what I expect on this show. Then we come back with the rundown straight ahead on the iHeart Talk Radio Network.
This is News Talk Tonight with Jim Richards on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back. We did miss you over the iHeart Talk Radio Network. I'm iHeart Talk Radio Network, as just mentioned, Jim Richards. Later on tonight, there is a possibility that we will get around to...
Do the gross topic.
We have a gross topic.
Do the gross topic.
Yep.
Ew.
One of them that live from outside the radio station as we speak. We do have a gross topic that leaked out and many people want to hear more about it. We could get to that a little bit later on. But I know what we're going to get to. And so far, we've got some great texts at 71010. Tell us anonymously at 71010 your deepest, darkest secret. And we will rate them later. Between 1 and 10. And just please, ones only that we can say on the radio. I mean, we can say a lot of stuff on the radio by picking different words, but nothing, I think you guys get it. That later on in about an hour over the iHeart Talk Radio Network. What is happening right now on the iHeart Talk Radio Network is the lovely dulcet tones of Laura Babcock of Power Group Communications and host of The O Show and contributor to the iHeart Radio Network. It is Laura Babcock. Laura, thank you very much for your time.
Oh, thanks for that introduction.
That was beautiful.
Why don't you just wait to be introduced, Mike?
I can't. I'm just so excited to be here, Jim. And yes, you do look very handsome tonight.
Thank you. A lot of people are saying that, guys, but I don't want to brag. Mike Kaycook is the co-host of The Morning Drive on AM 800 in Windsor. Guys, thank you very much for your time.
Our pleasure. Well,
can I talk now? Good to be here.
Yes. Yeah, you can. It's a free-for-all. One of the my favorite things that we started doing is having our panelists give a final take, whether it's something in the news or something that's just off their chest. And we'll get to that in about 20 minutes time here on the iHeart Talk Radio Network. Finally, it looks like we're going to get some sort of a deal on February the 7th between the federal government and the provinces when it comes to health care. Jugmeet Singh was on earlier today with Vashi Kapelos on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
They're sharing stories about that moral injury, that feeling that they're not providing the care that they know they should be and they want to, but they can't because they don't have enough healthcare workers. And the private for-profit delivery is not going to fix the problem of healthcare workers. In fact, it will definitely contribute to making things worse.
So, but this is everywhere. I think people in Ontario seem to be in our own little cocoon, thinking that we're unique here. But Laura, do you think this should be addressed right across the country?
Absolutely, I do. And listen, we were kind of taken aback, not that Ford revealed his agenda of wanting to move towards more privatization options in the healthcare system. I think we all saw that coming, but we were taken aback by just how quickly it was being put in place. And this after going through a pandemic where we saw our hospitals underfunded by his government, and we saw the strife between the healthcare workers and his government. And so it didn't seem as though he was that interested in helping the healthcare system, and then comes out with this privatization options. So I think in Ontario, that's partly why we're reacting so strongly to this, but we are seeing this right across Canada. And this is an issue that is core to the Canadian sense of identity. I mean, it's whenever there's been those polls done, Jim, of what makes us Canadian, universal healthcare is something. Our public healthcare system, even though it's obviously not doing as well as we want it to do, is something that's core to us. So if we're going to make those kind of changes, if we're going to deinvest and put at jeopardy even being able to recruit enough healthcare people for our current public system, this has to be a national conversation, and the Prime Minister should be involved.
Mike, I don't want to cherry pick, but when we talk to somebody from Saskatchewan who've already done this, the lineups got longer, and we do know in Ontario that it's going to cost more.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. And I know there's a big concern about losing people in the private sector from the public sector going to the private sector. All I know is that the times I've used private clinics and I've used Shouldice for a hernia surgery, I got in way faster than I could have here in our public system. And the other thing is these online healthcare experts that you can get, doctors and other medical officials that are online, that's private too. It's paid by OHIP. I'm for this. Like, I know, Laura, you said, like, this is part of that makes us Canadian, our public healthcare system, universal healthcare. And obviously that has to stay part of it, but this is broken. Things do have to change, and they have to change dramatically. I just don't think it's realistic to have only public healthcare anymore.
I don't mind the idea of diversifying some areas where it makes sense, and for things that don't need to be part of the hospital system to be, or the family doctors, like some things at the pharmacies and some things elsewhere. But what matters is the guardrails of that. Hmm. What's going to protect the public system? What's going to protect the tax dollar? More importantly, what's going to protect the people who can't pay for the upselling services, right? Who have to have a second quality level of healthcare to those of us who can maybe jump ahead in the line at these private offerings. So that's my concern. If we're going to stay with our Canadian values, then let's make sure that we're making this equitable if we're going to have this kind of diversification. And that's a federal conversation.
I would like to take a look at, and I don't know, but best practices in other countries that do have two-tier and how they do that, and whether or not the outcome for both sides can be an upside without hurting the other. I think that's one thing that we can do. But I don't know, in this country, it's always DEFCON, worst case scenario versus the Americans, or... So we can't have a discussion without somebody saying, well, then you want it to be the worst of the American stories.
That's a great point, Jim. That really is a good point. We always are comparing ourselves to the U.S. in whatever topic. It seems like there are a lot of other countries in the world that are doing this, including Germany and, you know, other countries around the world that have two-tier healthcare. And, you know, let's study them. What are they doing right? What are they doing wrong?
I can jump in. I think we reference often two of our biggest influences, right? The UK, which has their very public system, which is very supported, and then the US. And we were down in the US, and my husband sprained his ankle badly. We had to go to a US hospital. He had good work insurance, or good insurance through his work. So we had like hotel level service, like almost concierge took us through the hospital, in and out with x-rays, treatment, everything in 2 hours. It was like being in a VIP hotel. I couldn't believe it. But that is only the experience one has when they can have insurance to cover the $20,000. Wow. I forget what the bill was, but it was a hell of a lot. It would have, you know, been unaffordable for us.
That sounds like it's almost like, I'm glad I hurt my ankle. This is great.
But if you have great insurance, if you don't, the bills that we saw that we had to submit for insurance, we couldn't have paid for that.
Yeah, it's crazy. Is it appropriate for Canadians to look south of the border and say it's time to reflect on how we do policing here in this country? Of course, this after the tragic story last week in Memphis, Laura?
Yes. Oh, my God. On Saturday, the Hamilton police, who, and you, I think you know this story, had a knee on the neck of Roel Mohamed not a year ago, who was peacefully protesting the takedown of an encampment. I mean, this is a young woman. We have the photos. There were charges laid against four black youth. It took the entire community months, Jim, for us to get those charges taken away. The Hamilton police have never fully apologized. And then on Saturday, they had the temerity to put out this little tweet from the chief saying, oh, what happened in the U.S., terrible, terrible, we denounce it, and we're working with community. And we're all like, really? Really? So I think in Canada, these police, not all of them, obviously, but police services that have the kind of reputation Hamilton's does, and it wasn't just that one incident, by the way, on the public record, can't just say, oh, bad police in the U.S., and not look at their own houses. Clean them first.
Mike?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, there's no doubt there is some kind of issue in this province, in this country. And, you know, last year, Toronto Police released their race-based data. Last year, found police more likely to use force in an incident involving black people than white people. I don't know if it's a training issue. We talked to Chris Lewis, the CTV public safety analyst, this morning on our show. He didn't think it was a training issue. He thinks it's a hiring issue. Like, who are we hiring to put in these very highly responsible positions, community leaders that police are? And I think most police do a great job. Most of them are have very high integrity, but there are a group that are being hired that are not meant to represent the community and be in uniform and protect
us. I would agree with that. We've got to take a break. Mike Haycook is with us, along with Laura Babcock. Their final takes in about 15 minutes time. But also on all of that, I mean, there's the crowd that wants to defund the police. And then it gets to, again, you almost can't have have a conversation where you're like, hey, can we talk about policing? And people are like, well, no, they want to get rid of police. Well, it's not the way to have a constructive conversation about policing, because clearly we're not going to get rid of all police. It's the iHeartTalk Radio Network.
This is the iHeartRadio Talk Network, and News Talk Tonight continues with Jim Richards.
We have heard from ones and twos of people who are faking excitement about our topic in about 50 minutes' time, which is right now. Text us your biggest secret, and we will grade your biggest secret in about 50 minutes' time. Text us your biggest secret at 71010, and then we will grade your biggest secret at 850 right here on the iHeartTalk Radio Network. We are with the very talented Mike Kaycook, co-host of The Morning Drive on AM 800 in Windsor, and also Laura Babcock, equally as talented, Power Group Communications, The O Show, and contributor to the iHeartTalk Radio Network. Guys, I've always been a big advocate of safe injection sites. I think the proof is in the pudding. They keep people alive. I do think communities need to do a better job being responsible to the neighborhood around these safe injection sites. I know where I live, there is one, and randomly you find syringes in parks, which is something that nobody wants to see, but I don't know that we've hit the perfect way about how these things should coexist in communities yet. I know that's an issue right now for you in Windsor, Mike.
Yeah, well, it is. This is like the story of the last 2 weeks, so that this thing was about to open, the safe consumption site, first one in the city. And all of a sudden, the newly elected council, one councillor who represents this area, says, you know what, I think we should talk about this again. It's been going on for 4 years, all the research and all the work to go into it. It was supposed to open at the end of March, and they were going to debate this and open this motion at council tonight at this very moment, and that has been put off. They came to some compromise. They're going to talk about it in 2 weeks, but it's been so much talk about mostly the location. Most people are not debating whether they work or not. It's where it should be located. This is downtown. A lot of people have a hard time with the location because it's right outside the Windsor-Detroit tunnel. So you're having tourists from the U.S. come out, and they're going to see this location right in front of them. One of the first things you see when you come into Windsor, and
haven't
people
they
have
just
a hard
driven
time with
through
that.
Detroit?
Well, it's a very good point. This building will not look obvious, though. I mean, they've done it up nice, and it's just about to open. And now all of a sudden, you know, we're looking at the location again. So, and one counselor in our city even said he doesn't want any of these. He doesn't think this is a good solution for anyone, that it should not be located anywhere. And I totally disagree with that. If you look at the research, this is a way to save people's lives, number one, and then maybe get them the help when they're in the building.
Well, we've heard a lot of people, including from one of our pundits last week in Vancouver, who said, yeah, it saves people's lives, but what does it do to the lives of the people who have to interact with, I think I've heard some people call people who are drug users zombies in their community. So not my words, but what are your thoughts, Laura? Because I am in favor of them, but I do think that we need to do some work on how they live side by side in communities.
It's a really tough issue. Of course, we need to provide safe sites, and we cannot pretend that the crisis that we have of addictions and of homelessness and everything else and mental health is not real, and it's not everywhere. And this isn't a safe site particularly, but it reminded me a lot of what's happening in Hamilton right now. A group of citizens are trying to put up tiny shelters like other cities have been doing just to house the homeless while we try to figure out this terrible housing crisis. And the city has dragged its feet on it for a year, and now is dragging it out for more months, even after a site was donated privately. So there's this real NIMBY aspect to this, right? People care about the problem, but they don't want to have to see the problem.
Yeah, and I don't blame people, Laura. Like, if it was next to my business or where I lived, I wouldn't want it next to me.
Yeah, but we've dealt with this ever since we've had to, ever since the downloading and the shutting of hospitals 25, 30 years ago. People don't want to have these halfway houses in the neighborhood, don't want to have injection sites, don't want to have shelters. I mean, and they end up getting kind of being ghettoized in a downtown area or something. Then the area goes down. We have to look at this from a more compassionate, more, we have all have to share in the solution to this, whether it's through our tax dollars or whether it's through the locations of some of these places. We can't just push them away like they don't exist. They're people.
Okay. The passing of
Bobby Hull has the score number 50. The Golden Jet driving at center.
Impressive career, guys, but I wonder, I've seen a lot of headlines, one in particular that said Bobby Hull passes away at 84. Good riddance. Is it appropriate to talk about some of the bad sides of, I mean, this is a sporting figure, but if you wanted to talk about a Pope and some of the things that happen on their reign, nobody has time for that. Or if you want to talk about colonization when the Queen dies, nobody has time for that. Or if you, as I got in trouble back in the day, want to talk about some of the things that Michael Jackson was accused of the day after he passes away, you're an evil person. But today we're talking about, and many people celebrating the life of Bobby Hull, despite the fact he appeared to be an anti-Semite, a racist, and two out of his three wives alleged that he was abusive. Is it okay to point those things out today?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's not socially acceptable. Everybody's the best person ever when they die, the day they die. And then, you know, maybe books come out, history comes out after that. But you know what? This is who the guy was. And if he wasn't a good person, doesn't sound like he was, then you know what? That's on him. That's his legacy. That's the life he lived. And you know what? You know, I'm sure people remember him mostly for what he did on the ice. And they were a Bobby Hull fan. And they, you know, they remember all the goals and him playing for the Blackhawks and their leading scorer to this day. But you know what? He sounded like an a-hole. So yeah, too bad. That's your legacy. Should have lived a better life.
Laura?
Yeah, I think we can look at both. We can look at what they were able to do with their unique skill and talent and dedication and devotion to sport. And they brought a lot of people. He brought a lot of people happiness. Great. He got a lot of, he got lauded for that. He got compensated for that. What, you know, he got the fame and the benefits of that. He also, to Mike's point, did some other stuff, said some other stuff with his public profile, right? With his platform. And he has to be held accountable to that as well. We don't need to pick one side of the life, right? It's all part of who Bobby Hull was.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think we do this a lot with athletes, Laura and Jim. I think, you know, that they could do whatever they want. They could, you know, do all these terrible things, whatever Bobby Hull and other athletes are accused of. But, oh, they hit a home run. They score a hat trick. Best guy ever. Let's cheer them.
Yeah.
I feel like that's changing a little, though. I really do. I think that because we all have so much access to so much information now, we don't have to wait for decades before we can have these conversations.
We'll take a better look at his life a little bit later on with a member of the Hockey Hall of Fame. And in about 10 minutes, we'll talk to our friend Boris Butensky on decriminalization of small amounts of all drugs in British Columbia, which I am in favor of. But let's take a look at the last take or the last shot. Laura Babcock, what's on your mind?
Yeah, well, last time I was with you, my last shot was about the incredible, unaffordable state of rental housing or affordable housing in the province. It's terrible. And we're doing a special on it tomorrow on the O Show. And I've been hearing from landlords today. And I just wanted to raise that a lot of these small landlords that have one or two rental properties, they are having a terrible time, caught up in the system, can't get some tenants to pay sometimes. They're finding they're losing tons of money. I mean, it is a crisis right across our system, and we have to fix this. We have to have more affordable housing. We have to make sure that both landlords and tenants are protected.
All right. What about you, Mike K. Cook, co-host?
Okay, I want to talk a little football, Jim. I know you watched yesterday, Bengals and Chiefs and the Eagles and 49ers. And then we got Super Bowl, what, 57?
Super Bowl,
is that what we're on already?
57.
Wow. Live from Arizona in less than 2 weeks now. And I got to say, I think there's some intriguing storylines here. And I can't believe this one. I just read it today. First time in Super Bowl history, two black quarterbacks will be facing off against each other.
I was blown away
brothers.
By that. Too. Yeah.
Yeah. I was shocked by that. We have brothers, Jason Kelsey and Travis, his brother that's on Kansas City, who has won one. And who do you root for? If you're the parents of Jason and Travis Kelsey and you're watching this game, who are you rooting for? What jersey are you wearing? Will mom wear an Eagles jersey? Dad wear a Chiefs jersey? And I think deep down, if I was the dad, I think I'd be rooting for Jason just a little bit more because he does not have a ring.
Yep.
So we'll find out. Super Bowl LVII 57, whatever, Arizona.
I agree with you. I would cheer for the kid that hasn't won a championship yet. Guys, thank you very much. Very appreciative of your help each and every time we hear your voices. Laura Babcock of the Bay of Power Group Communications and at the O Show. Mike Haycook tomorrow morning in Windsor on AM 800. Thank you very much for your time.
Stay handsome, Jim.
Oh, thank you. Very nice of you. We go on a deep dive on what it means to decriminalize all drugs for small amounts in British Columbia next on the iHeartTalk Radio Network.
It's News Talk Tonight on the iHeartRadio Talk Network. Here's your host, Jim Richards.
That is true. We're a half an hour away from what might be one of the great segments in the history of talk radio. We're asking people right now, if you're listening, pull your car over and get a load of what the hell is going to be happening in a half an hour. If you're listening on the podcast, then go to the second hour because hopefully it will be great. We're asking people to text us your deepest, darkest secret. Okay? And we will rate your secret coming up in a half an hour. 71010, what is your secret? At the risk of embarrassing myself. Again, I mentioned earlier that when I was unemployed, probably 24, 25, moved back home, stole money from my mom's purse to go to strip joints. Not proud of that. I'm not proud that I still do that. Not the strip joint part, stealing money from my mom, who's old. So, what is your secret? 71010, right here on the iHeart Talk Radio Network in about a half an hour. But right now, we're joined by the lovely dulcet tones of one hell of a criminal lawyer. He's our News Talk 1010 and iHeart Talk Radio Network chief legal analyst. Boris Batensky is his name. Boris, thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure, Jim. Thanks for having me.
What are your thoughts on what they're doing in British Columbia, which is decriminalizing the possession of illicit drugs? And that's all drugs, as long as it's under 2.5 grams. I don't know a lot about measurements when it comes to drugs, but I take it that that is, you're looking at me like I'm lying, Andrew. I honestly don't. I'm not a marijuana guy. I don't know about amounts. But anyway, Andrew, we'll take that up in the commercial break. I am in favor of it for one reason, and maybe you can tell me if I'm right or wrong, Boris. It's that if somebody is trying to get their life together, to have a criminal record, it might be more difficult to get your life in line, to get a job, and to try to straighten things out. If you do have a criminal record, you've got enough of a problem trying to get the monkey off your back.
Yeah, I agree with you on that point for sure. And Jim, I think for listeners who don't know, BC has introduced a pilot project that will last until 2026, where a number of drugs are being decriminalized in the sense that possession by persons over 18, will no longer be a crime of small quantities of various drugs. And they're what we would call hard drugs, like cocaine and methamphetamine, MDMA, heroin even, and various other opiates. So it is a good first step in my view, but it's only a first step. And if it's the only step we take, then frankly, I don't know that it will accomplish much beyond the specific issue that you've identified, which is worth something, but yeah, it's not worth as much as we think it can be worth if you combine even this step with ensuring a safe supply of some of these drugs, which is really what led to the opioid crisis and a lot of deaths from fentanyl overdoses and so on. And it's what's led, in part at least, to this pilot project.
I don't know that I've seen this written. Decriminalization means that you won't get a criminal record or charged if you have 2.5 grams or under. But do they still confiscate the drugs and flush them down the toilet?
They actually won't, because it's no longer against the law to possess it. Again, assuming that you're over 18. I mean, one of the questions that, and it's funny how you talked about at the outset, you know, how much is 2.5 grams? Is it really a lot? And I don't know either. And the truth of the matter is, how do police officers know? Like, how do you eyeball an amount of drugs that may be in someone's possession and decide if it's 2.5 grams or maybe that's 5 grams or perhaps that's, you know, only 4.3 grams. And, you know, there are going to be issues about enforcement and there's going to be issues about, you know, whether or not you want to have these continued interactions between police officers and the, you know, those who are regular drug users. Look, it's a first step and we can massage some of these issues out as we go forward. The bottom line is that it's a first step to treating drug abuse as an addiction issue as opposed to a criminality issue, which is an important first step.
So we're still going against after the dealers and all of that kind of stuff. And people, it's not a free for all. It's just to make sure that people who are maybe have a problem or maybe haven't developed a, say, a cocaine problem yet, but they're not going to get a criminal record. What are other things that society could do to help in this vein? Or are there any things that we could do to help in this vein?
Well, there's a lot of steps and they're controversial and some of them are politically difficult. Like, for example, ensuring a supply of some of these drugs is available is really important from a public health and safety standpoint. It will also go a long way if we decriminalize not just the possession of some of these drugs, but also the sale of them. You're going to solve some of your organized crime problem because if it's no longer a lucrative business to sell drugs to drug users,
yeah,
then they'll have less of a reason to be, you know, fighting each other on various other issues. So, look, you can solve some societal problems, but it comes at a cost. And not everybody agrees that this is a good first step. A good final step. And taking one step, you're right, it helps. It helps get people, somebody who's got a cocaine addiction can then come forward and not worry about being thrown in jail and having a criminal record and all the other stigma that comes with it. But at the same time, for the most part, those people weren't being charged all that much now anyways. And it's still illegal to sell. You're still going to have to go underground and you're still going to have to take steps to be safe and find safe supply,
yep,
which is not going to solve all the problems that we're trying to solve by these measures.
The thing that I would say to people who are against this idea is, tell me how the war on drugs, as we're fighting it now, is working. Tell me where the wins are. Tell me, like, show me anywhere where things are working with what we've been doing for decades and decades and decades.
Yeah, you and I are on the same page about that. The law, in my view, the law on drugs has been a colossal failure. It's resulted in a whole generation or more than one generation of North Americans who have been criminalized probably for no good reason. And it's created a thriving organized crime business, which wouldn't have been in place if we had chosen to go down a different path. But having said that, though, there's a history of treating drugs as taboo. There's a political price to pay by decriminalizing and saying we're going to be in the business of selling heroin to people who want it. There's all sorts of community issues of where you're going to put some of these sites, safe injection sites. I mean, we know that there are many and a myriad of issues that go from, you know, local politics to federal politics in terms of drug policy that have to be overcome. But you and I are on the same page when it comes to the drug war on drugs being an abject failure. And the quicker we eventually get to having the government control the drug flow and taking it out of the hands of organized criminals, the safer we are going to be as a society overall.
Are you about to text us a secret that we can talk about? Well, you don't have to tell us, but do you have a secret that you don't want anybody to know, but you could text us at 7:10:10 that we could grade from 1 to 10 in about 20 minutes' time?
I mean, if I texted you a secret, it wouldn't be a secret. So I don't know about that.
Well, we don't know your number. Okay.
I'll have my daughter text you something that people won't know. We'll do that randomly.
All right. Thank you very much. Honestly, have a great night. And Boris, always appreciate your conversation.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for having me.
That is Boris Batensky from CrimLawCanada.com. He is the iHeart Talk Radio Network's chief legal correspondent. 7:10:10 in 20 minutes time, we'll go through our listeners' secrets and we will talk and grade them from 1 to 10. 7:10:10, what is your secret? That's on the way on News Talk Tonight.